and welcome to another episode of Say Pod. We're now on season 2. First of all, I just want to wish everyone a happy new year. As you know, Say Pod is a podcast focused on helping Black, Asian, and minority ethnic women be more secure online by having interviews with experts. So today we're going to talk about the old age topic of privacy. So is data privacy a myth? Today I am joined with Sophie. And Sophie has a very interesting background, but I'm not going to give too much away. I'm going to let her introduce herself. So Sophie, can you please tell the audience about yourself and your interest in cybersecurity?
Okay, hi Steph. So I'm not sure I have like a very, very wildish background, but yeah, I have a bit of, my name is Sophina Kulosin. I'm from Nigeria and I'm currently doing a master's degree in information security. But prior to that, I've had a bit of experience working in the tech and cybersecurity industry. First off, I started as a digital security analyst at Co-Creation Hub in Lagos, and then moved on to become a security analyst at Ethnos IT Solutions before leading a security and safety unit at a human rights organization called the Initiative for Equal Rights. I also happen to co-run a community for women in cybersecurity. It's called shesecures.org. And it's more or less a platform. It's similar to Cydia. It's more or less a platform that helps like empower women who are like interested in tech or interested in cybersecurity and connects them to their fellow professionals who could help them become better professionals in the future, who could provide them the resources that they need in the future. And so pretty much that's about me. I did computer engineering in my undergrad, and now I'm focusing on cybersecurity as a whole, because for me, I think it's not only about learning, it's not more about the whole learning process that you might have taken to get here, but it's more about what you do with it. So this master's for me is more about having to take it a step higher. So even if it's getting to a managerial position or having to use the skills that you have to lead a better team or lead the cybersecurity infrastructure better, how do you handle all those sort of roles that you're being provided for? How do you handle the tools better? How do you handle people better, management or data management or governance or the risk aspect and every other thing? So it's like it's a whole lot of things covered in one. But yeah, that's a little bit about me. I hope I covered everything, but yeah, that's all.
You did more than enough, and I beg to differ. That was definitely an incredible profile, especially with the work that you do with human rights and just protecting people's privacy online.
So, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So I know that a lot of people don't know what data privacy is. I think we hear lots of conversations about, you know, being more secure online, being more private, you know, with your data, people sending your data. So in your own words, how would you describe or define data privacy, and in this day and age, why do you think it's important?
Okay, so I'm just gonna like try to explain it in the simplest form that I can. So it's more or less how you can, or how a piece of information, so let's say your name, your age, your date of birth, your house address, how it ought to be handled or how it ought to be protected based on how important it is. So every single piece of data wouldn't have the same level of security or the same level of privacy that it ought to have. The way you protect, say, your name, which is public information, or the way you protect your house address, or the way you protect your personal records, wouldn't probably be the same way as you provide, let me say, a meal that you enjoy to eat, the meal you enjoy eating, or a food that you took that is publicly available. But all this sort of data, they rest on either the organizations who are asking for that kind of, for that data from you, or the platform that are using them. So if you share your name, for instance, with a website, say you go onto an e-commerce website or you go onto a shopping website, and they're asking you to put in your name, your house address, your card details, it is their duty as the platform that is requesting for it to ensure that data is being protected, which is what all data privacy is about. So if they feel like they find a way to fault in that aspect of protecting your data, being it confidential, ensuring that it doesn't get to the wrong hand, ensuring that it's not altered so somebody doesn't take it and change it to be something else. It is their duty to ensure that that is always provided, that is always ensured. But if at any time at all they fault that or they find a way to fail in protecting that, then you know that there's a data breach and you ought to hold them responsible for it. So it's important as an individual, it's also important more as a business for you to ensure that you do that, because that is the only way to show how credible you are as an organization. Mm-hmm. It's the only way to show that, oh yes, we actually trust, we actually care about our customers, we actually care about data that you feed us with. We don't just want to like leave it up to you to just give it to us and then we treat it with no regard or no respect, so we can just go about being all careless on how the data is being stored or how data is being managed. You hear a lot of breaches happening here and there, but a lot of times it's usually the fault of the organization because they don't invest as much as they should in ensuring that they have enough people to handle this data properly. They have the right tools, or they have the right knowledge power, or they might have the right skills to provide data privacy or data security. So just data privacy is just ensuring that whoever is handling your data, whoever is requesting for your data, no matter what they're requesting it for, no matter what they're going to use it for, it's being handled properly. So it's being kept in a very secure or private or very secure manner. Yeah, using the right tools and using the right resources available to them. So even if they have to use the GDPR to guide them in protecting it, then you should use that to guide them.
No, I totally agree. And I think what I love that how you explained it is in the responsibility of the organizations in terms of how they treat our data. Because if the data, I think from what we discussed in the previous podcast, like if the data was to go into the wrong hands, somebody can, you know, enter into your bank account, someone can steal your identity. And there's just so many avenues of cybercrime out there that is more essential now than ever to just protect people's data.
Yeah, exactly. And when you asked if it was a myth or not a myth or not a myth, I would say I think we're creeping into that era where it's going to be a myth, because imagine how much technology, how much new technologies and new devices that are being created every single day. Like there's something new actually happening. There's always something evolving, or there's something disrupting. If it's not AI, if it's not an IoT device, if it's not you requesting Alexa to change the heat of your room or for you to turn on your smart TV or something, it's one way or the other, it has a way of creeping into your lives. And then you begin to wonder, so are we actually going to find a way to obtain this data privacy? I don't know if we're ever going to do that, but it's a war between having to choose functionality and having to choose security. Because no matter when you go to a website, you find yourself clicking on enable cookies, or because if you look at it, when you start disabling the cookies, you might not even get the functionality of the website or the application on your mobile phone that you want to get.
That's
and
true.
If you look at the process of even disabling it, it takes like a whole long period of time having to go click here for like up to 1 minute or 2 minutes. You're still trying to disable the cookies or disable weird privacy settings. So when you think about this, people will just want to opt out for being comfortable and go with the easy life, being like, oh, whatever, if they want my data, they should go for it. I can't start going being bothered about having to disable a lot of things that will take up my time when there's really no time to spare. So it's hard for a lot of users like decide if it's safety or if it's security for them, or if it's just going with the whole comfortability of the app, or just choosing to, well, let's just use it. It doesn't matter if they have all my data, I just have to use the app right now. If I start disabling the permissions, it probably will not make any sense anymore to use the app without all those things. If you're using an Uber app, for instance, there's no way you want to turn on your location settings.
That's true.
Even if they tell you that you have to use it only within the app, they will tell you that it's only within the app, but then in the background, it's still running and it knows your location either way. It's complex and it's complicated, so I think it's an illusion, or probably headed to an illusion.
But you know what, I do agree in terms of it being an illusion, but at the same time, I feel like two parties have a part to play. I think for companies, they deliberately make the terms and conditions extra long so nobody wants to read it. So it's a thing where, is it truly us, you know, choosing between us being inconvenient or us, you know, valuing our privacy? Or is it a thing where companies have made it deliberately difficult that we have to obviously choose convenience? Because obviously we live in an era where everyone's quite busy. Everything is trying to get our attention or is trying to distract us. So nobody's going to be spending 20 minutes reading the terms and conditions. And most of the time, these terms and conditions can be simplified into 250 words.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And at the same time, as users, it's a thing where if we are serious about data privacy, I think we're going to have to sacrifice our, you know, convenience to actually be reading and saying, okay, where is our data going to, and what is it about? And I have a funny story.
Okay.
Totally unrelated. But I remember I had, like, when I started taking my data seriously, was I actually had a dream about my location being everywhere. And then I realized that actually, if I'm putting my location on my Instagram, and especially when I think it was after I watched You, when season one was out.
Yeah.
After that nightmare, I was like, there is no way I'm going to be putting my geolocation and anything until I've left the place. So if you see me putting something on Instagram, I've already left the place. That's why I can post.
Exactly. Like, people don't realize that is actually, for example, but I have to actually give you a very good, it's a really good show. Like, apart from the whole creepy part of the person, it teaches you a lot about privacy and security, and people really need to, like, learn a lot from it. Like, there's no reason why you should actually just check in into a place and leave your location turned on. Why would you even do that? Like, what if there's somebody out there who is not... I'm sure that you're not a target for somebody to kill you or kidnap you or anything, but the world is crazy. There are lots of creeps out there, people who will do anything just to get at somebody or want to hurt somebody. So if you're going to use anything, make sure that you're checking in where you've left, like you said. Yeah, totally.
I think this is a little plug. Definitely go listen to our, I think, episode 3 podcast on oversharing. And a good friend of ours, Stephen, who came into the show previously, he recently did a Medium blog post about Netflix You and how that links into data privacy. So definitely something I would recommend to check out. So I think going on, since this podcast is about myths, the myths of not cybersecurity, of privacy and data. So we have 9.
Okay.
Which I've sent to Sophie already, and it was taken from Global Signs, kind of what are the common myths around privacy that people are getting wrong, so that everyone knows the full extent of data privacy. Hopefully this podcast will make it simplified.
Let's hope so.
So, hackers only target VIPs and people who are wealthy. So basically, the myth is hackers only go for people who have money.
Mm-mm. Nope. Not true.
That's myth one. So what do you think about that, Sophie?
I've been hacked before, and it wasn't based on, I wasn't popular, or I wasn't, what's his name, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, or any CEO of any company. And I think that was when I wasn't really sure. I wasn't really technical, I was technical, but I wasn't taking care of I wasn't so concerned about my privacy or my security and all that. So I let something just slip by, then my passwords and not being too focused on my security social media accounts and taking everything seriously. It was my Facebook account at that time, and think what had even happened. So the hacker hacked into it. I don't know how he got the password. When he went into it and started posting some weird porn images and videos on my wall. Somebody had reached out to me. I was like, are you the one sharing this stuff on your wall? I'm like, why would I do that? And I had to go, and then when I saw it, I think I didn't even have access to the account immediately. I had to reach out to Facebook to a whole recovery and everything, if I finally got access to the accounts. So really, it's not really about how, if you're wealthy or if you're famous or VIP or whatever. No, so long as they can get us any information that could actually either defame your character, or just put something out there that will cause people to either not trust you anymore, or even they could hack your account and at the same time reach out to people who they think you know. It might just be your connections on Facebook, and you can start sending messages to them and asking for money. extorting money from them or blackmailing them into doing things that you will not want. Because once they have access to your messages, definitely they have medium contacts on their messages. They know who you're chatting with or who you're messaging and what you're telling them. So if it's something you probably wouldn't want to get out there, they have the whole access to you right now. So they could do whatever they want to do with your information, sell it on the dark market or whatever, if it's very important, if it's very sensitive. People will always say, oh, I don't have anything to hide. Until when it hits you and then you find out that, okay, I actually did have something to hide. It might not be anything very scary or deep or whatever, but just maybe things about you. It could be your address, for instance. Nobody wants their address to be on the public space. That's everybody true. Knows where you stay. Isn't that going to be very weird and creepy, having somebody showing up at your door, sending you boxes of weird objects, and then you open it and you see something that you wouldn't want to see? So it's really not about how famous you are. Nah, that's a huge myth. Big myth.
Wow. And even I had never guessed that you were hacked as well, so it's quite interesting to kind of get that perspective as well, that anybody literally can be hacked.
Yep, you can actually.
So yep. Myth number two is my favorite. And I think it's because this used to be me ages ago. And that is, incognito mode or private windows on your browser helps keep you anonymous. It's a lie. It's an absolute lie. I feel like you need to have a VPN. And even when I'm on VPN, I also then go on incognito mode just to be sure that nothing...
Yeah.
Nothing is being shared anywhere. Nothing is being stored in my computer. But I don't know. What do you think, Sophie?
Absolutely, I think the same thing, because even when you know when you open your browser and incognito, the browser will also tell you that even your service, your internet service providers could actually probably see this thing as well. They could see whatever you're browsing. It's just that it probably won't be stored, or it wouldn't really be what they call it. It's when you open your next browser, it wouldn't be stored on your system, or it wouldn't be stored there on their own. But it's possible for them to actually, if they want to gain access to it, they can actually gain access to it. So it's in no way keeping you anonymous or keeping you private. All this just doing is that if somebody else who comes to use your computer, for instance, wants to browse a website or whatever with your computer, it's a shared computer. The only thing is that you won't be able to see your history and know that these are the websites that you've visited. But the best way to always stay anonymous is to always like use anonymous browsers like Tor, which is it's available online. You can just download it right away and install it. It has VPN features, it has encryption, different layers of encryption in it, and it's able to hide your traffic and location.
All right, so we had a little glitch, but no worries, we are back, and this is kind of a good time to remind everyone to stay secure online. Last time, you know, a few seconds ago, we were talking about Thor. So, Sophie, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was just trying to explain that incognito mode in any browser, so be it Chrome, be it Safari, be it Internet Explorer, whatever, so Mozilla, Firefox, they wouldn't keep you safe. They wouldn't hide. They would. They would just be to hide. Not store your data history or browsing history or store cookies so that they don't like target ads to you and all of that, but in all reality it wouldn't protect you or keep you anonymous. So if you want to go anonymous, the best thing for you to do is use an anonymous browser, and the most recommended one out there is Tor, which is a browser that provides you like real-time encryption. So assuming you're browsing from the US, for instance, so five locations ahead, it probably appear that you're browsing from France or you're browsing from Russia. Oh, I don't see Russia, but somewhere, anywhere around the country, it goes into different layers to provide you security and to hide the location of who might be trying to like sniff your traffic or sniff whatever thing you're doing on the web. It hides your identity, and well, it's kind of highly recommended anyway. So for now, we have Tor, and you can look that up or you could use it. That's the only way I can guarantee that, at least. No, I mean, no security is guaranteed at all, but to a high extent, like 90%, we can vouch for Tor.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's quite interesting, because for me, I normally use Opera and Firefox, but then I downloaded a VPN within like those specific browsers to use, but It's interesting. Even I have learned something new today. I would have never thought before. Okay, that's something I'm definitely going to plug in this podcast. So if anyone's interested, just look through the description of this podcast and I'll put the link there for you guys to download it. So myth number three, if your Facebook is private, only your friends can access your data. Not necessarily. I mean, your picture is still there. You know, you still have like your cover photo. They will still know whether you're a woman or a man, you know.
Yeah, anyone who searches your name online, like I just have to search for your name online. I probably go to your images or whatever. I don't even have to be your friends. If I really click on Google Images, I can still get some of the pictures that you've uploaded. Still connected to your Facebook profile and that of your friends as well. So it's Facebook isn't private. So what you need to do to make it more private, to make it more secure, you need to like go and review your privacy settings, check who is like who has access to your posts, who has access to your photos, who can tag you in certain photos, because sometimes you really want to restrict it down to just what you are really, really sure about. You don't want to like share something and then some weird person is tagging you on something that you don't want to be tagged on, because then it's that's how your whole digital footprint is being linked. So we can tag you and you, he or she, another person else can tag you. They're just building weird, they're building your digital footprint that you don't want them to build. So the best thing is to like review your settings, make sure that your security or privacy settings is the way you want it to be. Make sure that your location settings are probably not like left to be turned on. Make sure that when you visit certain places, it's not automatically checked to check in, because you wouldn't want that as well. So you just like find a way to like restrict as much as you can restrict. Go around sometimes when you're bored or anything, open your Facebook on the laptop. But sometimes when you're using the mobile phone, it doesn't show you as much settings as you want to see. But take a laptop or a desktop or whatever and like try to view how much settings are out there. We know that there's this new, But yeah, just go as much as you can and view the settings and see what's giving away too much details and what's not giving away too much info about yourself. You can also open a fake account and try to like view yourself and try to see what other people are saying, looking at all of you. So I can open a dummy account and try to search for myself and see what kind of information is available to the public and what they can see and what they can't see.
That's quite interesting. I never thought about having a dummy account. Well, that's a tip from Sophie, which I'll definitely ask people to implement. So we're going to go into myth number four. I think we've already spoken about VPNs.
Yeah, we touched on it a bit here.
So for those who don't know, VPN is a tool that allows you to hide your IP address. So you can put that you're coming from a particular country. My favorite is Israel. But that's because people don't really mess with Israel.
Like they have, I thought you would say Russia.
No.
Or even Iran.
Let me tell you something. People don't mess with Israel. I tell you that because if you look at the governments and who has spent the most on cybersecurity,
surveillance, it's actually Israel.
It's Israel. So no hacker. Well, I'm not saying no hacker. Obviously, some hackers out there might have the balls for it, or might have the boldness for it. But definitely, yeah. That's my personal fave. Is Israel, and because I think Russia is just everyone's go-to, and it's not really even Iran. It's a little bit better because especially now that they've been investing in drones in terms of military wear, I don't think people really want to be messing with them like that.
But
so, from your experience, is a VPN like the answer for having a completely safe and private experience online?
Well, to an extent, yes. To an extent, no, because not a lot of people have the money to pay for paid VPNs. Very, very often, it's usually like probably 70% of people who will be using the free one, and like 10% of people who actually really, really care about their privacy that will opt in for the opting for the paid ones, because the free ones, they don't provide any form of security at all. What they will do is that whatever like browsing histories and whatever you do, they sell it to third party provider, and they use that same data to target ads to you and every other thing that you'd expect. Whereas the paid ones are like, because you pay them money, so they have like a right, they owe you to ensure that your data is protected. They owe you to ensure that your location and every other thing that you do is hidden from the web. So if you're going to go for a VPN, you want to like at least invest some money. Sometimes they're not really that expensive, like $5 every month, like $10 a month, and you could actually get something that's actually good, Nord or CyberGhost or any of those ones that are really available. You can just opt in for them. But for the free ones, trust me, when you know something is free, you know that definitely, like Facebook, we all said it was free. Don't we know we're selling ourselves to the tech giants. We're always the ones who are going to end up paying for it, because they would use you, and so without you making any money out of the data they are even selling from you. So
that's true.
Let's just stick to the paid ones for now, and if you find it, pretty much stick to the paid ones. And but not sometimes as well. I wouldn't even say like all of the paid ones. There are countries that would still have laws and tell you that even if you pay for everything and all that, if somebody should come to the FBI or whatever should come now, they probably give out your data, because they are bound to the government. They still have governmental regulatory laws that they have to abide by and everything.
Apart from WhatsApp. Apart from WhatsApp.
Well, yeah, apart from that.
But to me, they were hacked, so really, yeah. That's not a totally safe thing either.
Don't see my, you know what's up. It's already encrypted, but nah, don't believe it.
Okay, so we're going to go into myth number 5, and that is your phone will always choose the most secure internet connection. That's a lie.
That's magic. We haven't gotten to that level yet.
Like, that is a complete lie. And you know, the interesting the point that you made earlier, that I just kind of want to bring this into this specific myth, is that with free Wi-Fis, there is a catch. Like, there's no such thing as like free lunch. There's no such thing as free anything, because everything needs to be paid for. And who pays for, you know, the tech? Who pays for the people? Where does the money come from? And with that, with like free Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi hotspots, you have to be careful, because your data is being, you know, sold. Which is why, personally, if I'm like desperate, completely desperate, I always put fake emails.
Exactly. Like xyz.whatever.com or.
And it's followed.
So long as it goes through. As in, nobody cares.
You just follow the format something something at something something dot something something. And you get away with it.
Yeah. Exactly, that's just the best way to get on the public Wi-Fi. Because if you start using your personal email, never use your personal email. Never use the one you use either for work or for anything personal. Your phone, and that's why I say your phone will never ever choose anything secure. That's not what the phone is built for. It's just built to connect to anything that is connectable, be it your Wi-Fi, your hotspots, anything. You're the one, it's your responsibility as an individual to ensure that it's connecting to a secure source, or it's connecting to something that wouldn't make you vulnerable as a user. So whatever you're connecting to, be it a Wi-Fi, be it a hotspot, anything at all, just ensure that it's actually secure. And even if you connect to the Wi-Fi as well, doesn't mean that whatever your information you're browsing, somebody else could be running it to Wireshark or anything and sniffing your traffic at the same time. So in as much as you're giving a fake email, or you're putting an email that you think is just a dummy email, you don't want to do anything sensitive on that network. Say you don't want to like make a bank transfer, or you start what other thing would you probably do? Shop online, where you have to put your bank details on the website, because anybody else on that same public Wi-Fi network would be able to see every like transaction history, or every traffic that's been sent from your mobile phone and from every other user who's connected on that same public Wi-Fi. So just do anything. Like, it's not, it's very busy, maybe browsing Google, looking at YouTube, probably WhatsApp, or anything that would already require you sharing a lot of confidential information.
I totally agree. I would also recommend, you know, getting, using a VPN app on your phone as well.
On your phone as well, whilst doing that. Sure.
It's definitely a good idea. So, let's move on to myth number 6. If your device is offline, so like if you put your phone in airplane mode, it makes it totally safe.
Yeah. Well, for the phone, yes, in a way, because you're holding your phone. It's, if it's a laptop, it's a different case. For the phone, it's very hard for you to like get viruses or anything when you're not connected. Sometimes I always feel like if for you to be like 100% secure, or for you to observe security in total, but sometimes you might just have to go offline and like live under the ground and not interact with anybody in the digital space or anything. But in a way, that's for the phone, it could be possible. You can do that, except you go back to the web and you have to, like, let's say, download apps that are like not from, let's say, the original Play Store or the App Store, and you have to, you, once you install that, you are now installing like viruses to your phone. For mobile phones as well, for your laptop, it's possible you can't be 100% safe even if it's offline, because somebody else could as well plug in a USB that has been infected or malware and get away with it. And once you open your system, you don't have to be online. As long as you're logged in, it's been running in the background, and probably be a spyware that is capturing your keystrokes and things like that. Like the popular, what do you call it, the popular Stuxnet one that was made from Iran. And had to like infect it with a bunch of USB flash drives and all that. So it's actually capable, it's possible for any other person to actually do the same thing as well through CD or through a USB. So even if your computer is not connected to the internet, it's still possible for those kind of programs or those kind of viruses or malware to run in the background without having been connected to the net.
Okay.
So even if you want to like check out how those things are running, you can take some time and like look through the processes that are running on your system. Go to your system, to the task manager, and try to review the activity that's been in background. See if you notice anything abnormal or there's anything fishy, you could just terminate them or uninstall them or just end the process so that it doesn't affect you eventually, or it doesn't crash your system or continue spying on you or cause your system to like be feeding data to the cyber attackers or cyber criminals somewhere, because you wouldn't even probably know. It might just be in the background, but just try to review the process that are running on your system every now and then, see what is abnormal and see what's normal. If you notice anything with a name that looks funny, and you're sure that you didn't install it, or you don't have any app like that by that name, just uninstall it. And then also have like antiviruses running, so you can be able to like pick up some things that are running, doing a lot of scan maybe every week or twice a week or once in 3 weeks, just to check that everything is okay and you're safe.
Okay, that's actually some good tips that I've learnt there. I think for myth number 7, so we've spoken about encrypting our data, our, you know, digital footprint. So myth number 7 is that if you encrypt your traffic, it would keep your data totally private and secure. It's a tricky one. I think it's a yes and a no.
Yes, it's in between. It stands in between the yes and the no, because you can only encrypt, like, you can only do what you can only see and control. There's no guarantee that, say I'm encrypting my own traffic using my own VPN and whatever, what about the website that I'm visiting? Are they also encrypting their own traffic? Are they ensuring that my data, whatever, is being protected and all that? Like the Equifax breach that happened, I'm sure some of those users were also using like a VPN, or they were using, they were ensuring that basically the website they were going into was putting their details, had maybe the SSL or TLS enabled on it, but it still didn't protect them. because the company or the organization itself or the platform didn't take extra measures in encrypting the user's data that was being sent to them. They didn't find a way to store it properly. They didn't find a way to like have this secure storage through like more encryption mechanisms or techniques than involved. It was not hashed or nothing. It was just there for everybody else to see. So that's it's really, it boils down to even as much as the user will try to do as much as they can to like protect themselves on one end, the other people at the other end might not be doing as much as you're investing, as much as you're doing, which leads you to still be vulnerable to data breaches or data attacks. And so it's probably, it won't keep you like 100% safe, but it will be safe to an extent. Whereas the traffic that you're getting or whatever on your own system might keep you safe, whereas attackers will not be able to like assess your own location or get whatever data you're sending. But if you're using third-party websites or third-party apps, there's no guarantee that they are doing as much as you're doing to protect yourself. So
I agree. And I think it kind of links in, it answers myth number 8, which is if you have a VPN or antivirus, your privacy is virtually guaranteed, because you can only do so much from your part. But if you're engaging with third parties and other companies, you don't know their processes, which is why I guess this whole GDPR and fight for making companies, you know, responsible is much needed, because if you've done your part, you're in the hands or reliant on the company that you're putting your details in to do their part.
Yeah, and you would think that once GDPR came, people would take it seriously, or they would as well like enforce a lot of mechanisms or anything, but they're just like, oh well, it's GDPR, let's just do what we can, treating it like it's just a requirement, let's just see how much we can do and then and see if we can be GDPR compliance or whatever. They're not like, they're not really investing so much time or even the capacity or the resources getting like hiring the right individuals and things to ensure that those things are properly handled or the data is properly protected. They're just like, oh, let's just do it, let's leave it to them. GDPR will handle everything.
I agree. And I think the last one is probably like the key debate, right, is data collection impossible to avoid, you know, to avoid, and is anonymity online impossible to achieve? So can someone basically avoid giving their data to anyone? And is it possible for you not to be online in any way or any form? I think it's impossible, actually. Well, not impossible, but I feel like with stuff like LinkedIn, like we're all in the professional age, and they say about 80% of jobs, for example, are based on, you know, who you know, and jobs that people don't, you know, normally tell, put outside of their website. It could be just among friends. And sometimes we see these things on LinkedIn. So it's a thing where, like, if you want to be, if you kind of want to excel in your career, you kind of need LinkedIn to kind of give you a boost.
Yeah. But at least you know that with LinkedIn, what the sort of information that you put on LinkedIn isn't like, I know your email is there as well, I know they have your password and all those things, but at least you can control the kind of data that you're sending out to them, that even if it gets out or whatever, you know, that it's like publicly available information and all that. So, but you still expect them to, how would I put it? You still expect them to like know what kind of data is being collected, but you still expect them to like go to an extent of protecting those data you have. But it was like, remember what I said when I was starting, where it's the whole battle between like being comfortable or choosing the functionality, like you said, and choosing whether or not you want to go ahead with it, and choosing your security, your privacy. As a professional, you can't afford not to be on LinkedIn. Well, if you need a job, like if you're like a senior professional with like 20 years or 30 years of experience, you can say, okay, well, I don't have to put myself on LinkedIn. No matter where I apply, I'm sure they'll hire me either way. But if you're still like in the fair early areas of your career, you know, you need a network, you need to put yourself out there. So there's no way you would say, I don't want to use LinkedIn, or I can't put myself out there. You need to be there. Because nobody, how would they look you up and see what you've done, or what's your, if you're the right person or the right candidate for them? So it's so, but as individuals, I think we can always like try to ask. So if somebody's asking for your data, you go to a website and they're asking you for certain information about yourself. I think you can still ask them, oh, what exactly is it that be used for? Or if you go to a hospital, are they asking for too much information about you before they treat you? It's your right to always ask, like, oh, how are you going to protect this data? What are your policies regarding data privacy or data protection? What are you doing? Or how compliant are you? Or it wouldn't seem weird, because if they don't do it, then they know that they have to be fined if they're not protecting it or if they're not being compliant or anything. So it's in as much as it's a battle between, like, fighting for it being your whole functionality or fighting between to keep your data private. It's still your rights. The data privacy and data protection thing is a common right to everybody, I believe. Well, but I also, well, there's this quote I saw from this lady. Her name is Adenik Cosgrove. She works as a cybersecurity strategist at Proofpoint. So she says, just because a business complies with a regulation, that does not necessarily mean that it is doing everything that it can to protect its customers' personal data. So, for example, under the GDPR, the integrity and the confidentiality principle states that the organizations must implement an adequate security controls to safeguard personal data. But then the GDPR does not even specify or does not, like, tell you what adequate really means. So somebody can just say, okay, to preserve your personal data, to preserve this record, all I have to do is ensure that it is stored in a flash drive or it is stored in a hard drive. What about the details of how you need to store it? What kind of encryption mechanism you have to follow? What sort of rules and things you have to put in place for that thing to be actually secure or to be properly, like, stored in a secure manner? It just says adequate. Adequate can be anything, really. And organizations will just go by and fly by that and say, oh, we're GDPR compliant and we've done everything adequate to secure this particular user. Meanwhile, they are really not doing anything. You hear breaches every single day and you're wondering, is there no security professional there, or is there no data privacy officer in that organization that's on top of things? Because of this whole, is this little words in the policy or in the regulation that we just go ahead, go away with, so we can just feel that, oh yeah, it's what it says, adequate. So anything I do is definitely adequate, but there's no, like, extensive details about how deep they need to go and the data that is at stake. So, well, we'll see how it goes along the way in the future. We're still observing.
That's true. I think, you know, we just never really know, with how technology is expanding, what the future for data privacy is. Yeah. I think we're just quickly going to talk about one thing, is the recent event. So I think 2 days ago, or was it yesterday? I think it was on 29th.
2 days ago.
Yeah.
28th.
So I think it was a day of data privacy as well. Interesting for PR. But Facebook decided to introduce this thing called Off Facebook, which allows you to basically see your data history with Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I guess, how many companies are sharing your data between Facebook? And when I did mine was 546.
I haven't even checked mine, but, like, I've not been using Facebook for a while, so...
Same, but I feel like, for me, same. I think when Twitter came about, so I think when I was about, like, 18, 17, I left Facebook for good, because I just felt like it was a grown-up social media, and, you know, I feel like Twitter was more where people my age were. But also, yeah. I was so, like, astonished by it. And I think this is a good PR move, because obviously Facebook is trying to revamp itself. They've changed their logo, you know, after the whole Cambridge Analytica, you know, Analytica thing. They've really been trying to show that they are compliant with their, you know, data privacy. But quickly, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, like you said, I think it shows that they are listening to what people are saying. It shows that they are trying to make, like, an effort. So I think it's a win for, like, people who use technology a lot and people who, like, are really concerned about their privacy. Because now, it now offers, like, everybody and a sort of opportunity to see the ugly details of how this whole advertising thing and third-party whole surveillance thing actually works. Because before, we only had, like, an idea. You only see, like, a very little picture of how this when somebody tells that, oh, these people are serving your data, another app is serving your data, you don't really know what kind of data they're serving. You don't know how it's being used or what you're using it for. But now you pick this whole new tool, I think you can get like a very big picture. But then it doesn't still mean that it's I'm cool with it, or I'm like, I'm going to be saying I'm 100% game or whatever with it. No, it's the best tool for me will always be to not stay, will be to stay away from Facebook. You're staying away from Facebook. Why can't every other person stay away from Facebook? What makes you think this whole data that they met, for instance, all the companies that you say they shared your data with, or that they show you that this particular company is sharing your data, what makes you think they're also not storing like backups of those same data, and that they will use it in future to like target you with ads and all that? You might clear the data and then you still find out that you have copies of it stored somewhere in your database. So I can't really tell that it's been cleared, or like maybe a copy is not being made or stored from somewhere else and they will use it for future purposes. So I'm like in between. Yes, it's a good step. Yes, they're trying to like revamp their image, or they're trying to look good for us and make sure that we're in control of the data. But when you now say, some people, just take for instance, now when you try to download, I tried to download my data one time from Facebook, I was like with 5 GB or 6 GB. Wow. Why would I want to download that?
That's a lot of space.
And then when I went ahead with it, and I started looking at some of the whatever details. Some of them were never making sense, but then they told me my data. Does the whole collection process and the whole thing that they're trying to tell us are very control, it's still a bit sketchy. But it's a good step anyway. It's good for us for now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think my hope is that this sparks a conversation with these tech giants. To be more compliant and maybe even enforce more regulations on them as well to be more compliant.
So, I think all the apps as well, all the other websites, they should also like open ways, tell us how they use the data and what kind of data they're actually collecting from us. And even if they should throw incentives. If you want my data, you can pay me. That's true. I can decide how much I want to give you for my data.
I think I saw this news thing, and the guy was saying that Facebook could have an option where users can have a data-free experience where they get to use the platform with their data not being sold. But when they calculated the amount, it was something that, about $700 or something like that, which people won't pay for.
Exactly.
And in my head, I'm like, why are we even paying for that? Aren't they supposed to be paying when they're making the money?
They're making money off us, and it's crazy.
Absolutely ridiculous. But I guess we'll see what the future holds for Facebook. It's something we're definitely going to be looking at. And finally, what advice would you give someone who wants to protect their data? I know you talked about the horrible experience of being hacked, and I haven't been hacked, but I can't only but imagine just how horrible that experience is. So
it told me to wake up and then teach myself more about security and started being more security conscious and very paranoid. So yeah, it was a disguise and blessing. Okay, for the advice, I'll say for users, first of all, for your homes, there are some things you could just protect yourself. So people who like receive mails on their mailboxes and stuff like that, those are like giveaway for identity theft. I recently was destroyed by Tyler Perry, where like there was a mail and there were mails lying around, and somebody else could have just come to like read all those emails from the person that was lying around outside their mailbox and try to see what the mortgage plan was, or what kind of health, maybe health emails or what health emails they were getting from their doctor or whatever. But if you have like these mail slots where you just like slot in the, if somebody gets an email, you slot into the mail slot and that is into your room or at least to your living room or your hallway. That way nobody can like retrieve that same mail from you. Nobody, attackers will not have a way to like get it out because it's already in your building. You can also like try to shred up like documents before throwing them into your bin. So a lot of us, we just like leave papers and then you dump it into the bin without shredding it, when you know that it's very confidential. Maybe it has your bank statements, or it has letters that you have received from different organizations or companies. You want to shred that out before throwing them in the bin. Then for online, you want to like get browser extensions. I shared this on my post one time on She Secures. So it's all about using privacy badges. These are like browser extensions that are for both Chrome and I think for Mozilla Firefox as well. You have privacy badger, you have uBlock Origin, you have Very Insecure. So you use HTTPS whenever you access them. You have password managers, you have cookies. Try to use VPN as well. We talked about it earlier. Review your privacy settings. So go to your social media accounts, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Try to review what you're giving access to other people. Go, you have, if you need to create a dummy account to like see what other people are viewing of you or what they can actually see on those accounts, please do that. Use appropriate passwords. So my own issue was that I didn't use a very secure password, like how I got hacked. So try to use a very strong password, recommended at least 8 characters that you can remember, phrases if possible. Then if you need to do it, if you've done everything and it's still not working, just go offline. Don't be on any digital platform. Disconnect from the world if you have to, and then the house. Because, I don't know. Everybody's just trying, or we're all striving to like, striving for a world that is completely safe, but we can't really do that if we the individuals are not doing anything on our own to like enforce that. So we have to like take some certain steps beyond what we're comfortable, what we're used to, try to like make this whole thing we're doing, the whole awareness, create some awareness about it. And then try to, everybody should treat GDPR and the whole regulation as not like a tick box exercise, but something that is very important and you cannot leave it out. So yeah, I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
I don't want to say, but then I just want to stop.
Thank you so much, Sophie, for coming on. I'm going to be putting Sophie details on this description, as well as stuff on She Secures. Definitely check them out. They've been doing some amazing work with African women. We have a recent collaboration where we're doing a virtual online internship. So please do check out for that as well. And check our website, Chuck Sadia, what we do, engage with us. We have a jobs board, we have a membership, sign, connect with us. We have a new recently patron, so if you want to like support us with the work we do, feel free to donate so we can release more content. And with that, I wish everyone a goodbye. Have an amazing week.